left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved. Made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, right back at it again. Let's get to it. Happy Friday. It is Friday, December 27th. Flames Talk is back with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers in our Groundworks downtown studio, Vix of NHL.com. Hopefully you had a lovely Christmas break. Hopefully you got some time with your family or friends or whatever the case may be. Hopefully you got a nice little break. If you celebrated, belated Merry Christmas. Hopefully it was just a good week. We were off for the vast majority of the week. We're back now on this Friday and happy to be back. And if it wasn't such a great holiday season, maybe back on Flames Talk, we can hang out and that can help us help a little bit as well. Hi, Vix.
You're looking refreshed and recharged, pal. Fresh outfit, too. Am I right to guess that is a little Christmas present?
A little Boxing Day. A little Boxing Day present to myself.
You went out on Boxing Day?
Yeah, I went to about 5 p.m. to Market Mall. And boy, did Kitten Ace and Aloe get themselves raided by this guy.
I have no comment.
Love those places. Let's go. Did you have a good break?
Wouldn't it hurt to have just a little longer, but I feel like given the market we're in, given the fact that the Calgary Flames haven't necessarily had a break like this at Christmas, I feel like that's just being like, okay, buddy, calm down.
Yeah, getting a little greedy here. Usually we get 72 hours at most.
Biggest break in over a decade and you want more? Come on.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. I thought it was a great break. It was good to see my my family out on the West Coast, hung with my brother and sister-in-law and little nephew, and then back here for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And it was great. It was a great little break on this end too.
I snuck off to Cochrane to hang with my parents, and lo and behold, they actually do have Home of Wes Gilbertson on the sign now.
They do now. Good,
incredible.
Finally,
long overdue, if you ask me.
I agree. Hey,
all due respect, Mason Raymond.
Yeah, sorry. This is
Wes Gilbertson.
This is Wes Gilbertson's town. Sorry, Cam, Shan, that you now have something to aspire to. Shan, Virgie, Cam, Hughes, our producers this hour, and you know this is the final, not the final one, but we're into our final kind of regular Flames Talk episodes of the calendar year 2024. And so over the next few days, we've got Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and those will be our final shows of 2024, some post games mixed in there as well. But on our kind of regular hours, want to dive in on some of the year-end content that we always like to do. We're going to do the top. I always enjoy doing the top moments of the calendar year. So we'll do that on Tuesday, maybe. New Year's resolutions are always lame, but they're a little fun to get into.
That hurts me even more because I'm like, what if we did this?
No, yours was, I actually kind of liked yours. It just would have worked better before Christmas. What's under the tree for this Flames player? So we'll just turn that into New Year's resolutions instead.
I'm hurt.
But on this Friday, this whole hour, we're going to count down the top five stories of 2024. But I guess we're not really going to count them down because I debated going in reverse order. But I'm like, that doesn't.
No, you got to give priority to the more major ones.
Exactly. Like, it's 2024. People know how to skip ahead. We're not going to go in reverse order. We're not going to insult your intelligence like that. And also, as you said, we don't want to be all of us. Oh, there's only 3 minutes left. The number one story isn't that, like, we want to dedicate the right amount of time to the big stories. So top five stories of 2024. You and I kind of collaborated on this, went back and forth, and each contributed some ideas and then put them in order. And I think you and I would have, this one would have been consensus, no debate needed. The number one story of 2024 was kind of that, I don't know, 5 week span of franchise altering moves for the Calgary Flames. And kind of the resolution of the exodus, right? Or the resolution of all of that work that was on Craig Conroy's plate. I call it the final resolution, right? There were the five big pending UFAs entering last season, but two of them were dealt in the calendar year 2023. Toffoli traded in June of 2023, then Zadorov in November of 2023. And so that was kind of a slow burn. It was kind of just a, you know, trickle here, trickle there. But then starting in the final day of January of this calendar year, things went haywire. By the way, text lines open at 960-960. If you're listening live, would love to hear from you on this front, your reflections or thoughts and looking back on any of these top stories. But overdrive in the first few months of 2024. January 31st, Elias Lindholm traded to Vancouver. And that kind of started the overdrive of news. Lindholm to Vancouver for Andre Kuzmenko, Hunter Brustevich, Yoni Yermo, a first-round pick in 2024, and a fourth-round pick in 2024. And by the way, the number one story, we're not going to make, somebody said not Gaudreau, we're not going to make a tragedy the number one story. We're just not. I mean, that was the number one story of the entire hockey world, but we're not going to make that the story of the, we're not going to use it to kind of make a segment out of. I would feel really wrong being like the number one story. Agreed. Is yeah, I just that would feel rather exploitive and just not something that I would be comfortable in doing. So obviously we all know that the Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Gaudreau family tragedy was it really was
transcends sport, never mind just the Flames,
one of the biggest news stories of North America over the last year. So we're not going to do that. So no, number one is not the Gaudreau situation. I think that we don't need to make that into content. I think that would be exploitive. So anyway, back on track. They make the trade with Vancouver on January 31st, then February 28th. Chris Tanev to Dallas for Artem Grushnikov and a second-round pick. And then March 6th, a week later, Noah Hanifin traded to Vegas for Daniil Miramanov, a first-round pick and a third-round pick. All of them on Wednesdays, which was crazy to think. January 31st, Wednesday. February 28th, Wednesday. March 6th, Wednesday.
By design.
I don't know if it was.
I very much doubt it.
That'd be rather interesting. But Vix, that ended an extremely stressful run, right? I know there was still a trade deadline to come, and there were still some other things to figure out. But especially in hindsight, and I think we knew it at the time as well, that ended just this incredible run of extremely difficult and time-consuming tasks that Craig Conroy had left on his desk when he took over the job as general manager. All these expiring contracts, and he got to Toffoli early on, and Zadorov kind of forced his way out with the trade request. But then you still had with no disrespect to those two guys, the three biggest trades to make were always going to be Lindholm, Hanifin, Tanev, and those three trades got done in the matter of 5 weeks. It was a hair-on-fire whirlwind stretch on the outside. I can't imagine what it was if you're Craig Conroy.
Yeah, you mentioned that span of 5 or 6 weeks. It's not like not that I'm telling anybody anything that they don't already know, but it's not like you're Craig Conroy sitting in your office and you're going, okay, one off the list. Now we can start conversations on the next guy. That guy done, now we can start. This is three different sets of ongoing conversations Craig Conroy would have been having, yes, with the Vancouver Canucks, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Dallas Stars. But those weren't the only teams Craig Conroy would have been talking to over the duration of what would have been 4 or 5 months in trying to determine what your 100%. Return is and where these players are going to go. So you're having upwards of like 3, 4, 5, 6, 10. Craig Conroy's probably laughing if he's listening. He's like, no, I've had 20 conversations a week on each guy for the longest time before these deals were done. And these were really, as you mentioned, sort of franchise altering or franchise determining type moves for Craig Conroy, who was a rookie GM. He was a rookie GM last season. That was year one for Craig Conroy. Yes, he was special assistant. Yes, he was assistant GM, but this is his first full year in big chair. And you're tossed all these sort of anvils of pending unrestricted free agents. Will they re-sign? Won't they re-sign? Will they get traded? When will they get traded? And I can't imagine the kind of stress that puts on an individual in their first season when they have so many high profile players. You're negotiating with other teams. You're still negotiating with agents to see whether or not you can come to a term and a dollar figure that would keep them Flames. So yeah, for me, just the, again, I like how you put it, the final resolution, the end of the exodus for all those players that quote unquote didn't want to be in Calgary. You got that in order. You define what your future is, both in the short term and in the longer term. This was a massive big picture year, 2024, for Craig Conroy.
And a massive 5 weeks. Like, imagine the amount of sleep or lack thereof that a general manager would be getting at that time, and the stress. And I just, when Craig Conroy sat down in the hot stove lounge at the March 8th trade deadline, so, you know, this is a week after Hanifin had been dealt, it was 2 days after Hanifin had been dealt. My bad.
Yeah, after Tanev, roughly.
Yes, about a week after Tanev, but 2 days after Hanifin had been dealt. And, you know, he did a couple of minor things at the trade deadline, but nothing large. All the work had been done prior to deadline day. But he sat down in the hot stove lounge, and he looked like a zombie. Like
respectfully, Craig, respectfully.
The Craig Conroy that we see now, and that you know, makes fun of you, and like all the that's a very different Craig Conroy than the gentleman who looked like his soul had been sucked out of him on March 8th on trade deadline day, and for good reason. So that was the first question I asked him when he sat down on Flames Talk, and yeah, he wasn't going to skirt the fact that he was glad that all of that was finally put to bed.
Mentally draining, if I have to be honest. Yeah, it's a lot. It's been, you know, I know people think it's going on for a few weeks, or I mean, this is months and months of stuff behind the scenes. So yeah, I'm very, very happy it's over. And I mean, I think when, you know, I was able to get the job, you're excited, but then with all the UFAs, it started right then. And then here we are today. It, you know, it seemed like a daunting task back in August.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this isn't going to be easy. So, you know, to kind of have to do all the moves I've made to move on. I mean, we've always talked about asset management and trying to get as much back. If we could not get guys signed, we had to get return for them. And, you know, I know people always want different things, the top prospect, but when you have USAs, that's what, you know, I was learning. It wasn't as easy to get first round picks and top prospects back, but you try to do the best you can and make your team better.
And in that 5 week span, that was Craig Conroy on Flames Talk earlier this year. In that 5 week span, from and with no disrespect to Andre Kuzmenko, they brought in a large number of things in three different transactions that could end up being big parts of this team's future. They brought in what, three, potentially four, if you count Miramanov as a prospect, which I think would be borderline.
Yeah,
but definitely three prospects: Grishnikov, Brustevich, Yermo, all defensemen they brought in. So there's three prospects and then an absolute slew of picks. Two first-round picks, a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and a fourth-round pick, all brought in those three trades. And the circumstances were not ideal on any of them. The Noah Hanifin one, I think, jammed up Conroy the most, just because there was so much pressure and control being exerted by the Hanifin camp. Despite him not having a full no move, the Hanifin camp worked in the background, and this is not a criticism, but this was an agent working for his player and kind of limited the options or tied the hands a little bit of the Flames in terms of where they could move him. Hanifin was somewhat non-committal on most places about signing and about committing long-term. Remember, Hanifin did not sign immediately upon being traded to Vegas, like most guys do. Max Pacioretty, I believe, did. Definitely Mark Stone signed an 8-year extension before playing a single game with the Golden Knights. It took weeks.
April 11th.
So yeah, took more than a month for Noah Hanifin to decide whether or not he wanted to commit to Vegas. And I can tell you for a fact, I know this for a fact, that Vegas was like, holy, is this guy going to sign? Like, we thought that you bring a guy into Vegas, you show him the strip, you show him T-Mobile, you show him the situation, guys want to sign immediately. It took more than a month for Hanifin to sign there. And I know that that was somewhat surprising for people in Vegas. They're like, oh, we thought this was going to get done. He didn't commit right away, but we thought this was going to be a fait accompli. And it did turn out to be that, but took a little bit longer. And so all those things made that trade a little bit more difficult for the Flames to maximize value on. Knowing all those circumstances to get a first-round pick, two picks overall, and we'll see what Miramanov ends up being. I still think Conroy did a hell of a job on the Hanifin trade. I really do. I just know how much stress that was exerting on him over a long period of time because of the hurdles and the roadblocks. And the three trades overall, I think you have to grade that he did a really good job on them.
I don't know how you don't give him anything but an A-plus on the Lindholm deal in particular, where you're talking about you're talking about Brustevich, Yermo, as you mentioned, a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick on top of Kuzmenko. And we can save the Kuzmenko debate for another time, but there was a moment there at the tail end of last season where it was like, whew, what kind of asset can you flip for Kuzmenko and further build on this Lindholm deal? There's a reason why Lindholm was traded July 31st. The right deal came across Craig Conroy's table. That is a deal that you don't hum and haw, and maybe you circle back to Team X or Team Y and be like, hey, Vancouver's offering this. What you got? Because this deal's getting done tonight. And it was late at night, if I'm not sort of mistaken, by the time it all shook down.
Well, but yeah,
you were in Vancouver. You were in Coquitlam, BC.
Yeah, and I remember it. Part of what held up the trade was getting Kuzmenko to wave to come here. And that took a little bit of time to get him to say, okay, yeah, I'll go there. I won't hold this up. Because if that doesn't happen, then all of a sudden the deal's very different because now the Flames might have to retain salary. They didn't end up retaining a single dollar because Kuzmenko was kind of the offset on Lindholm's really cap-friendly
salary. He was the cap relief for Vancouver to make that happen.
Exactly. Okay, so that was the first of the top five stories of 2024. The final resolution when it came to the five big unrestricted free agents, and that resolution happened in the span of about 5 weeks. Lindholm, Tanev, and then Hanifin in that order. Number two story, I call it the Jacob Markstrom saga because for weeks leading up to the trade deadline, there was all kinds of speculation surrounding Jacob Markstrom's future with the Flames. Would he be traded? Would he be traded to one specific team, the New Jersey Devils? There was even a reported deal that fell through, that didn't go through leading up to the deadline. And then a week before the trade deadline, on Mika Kiprusoff jersey retirement night,
the morning of,
Jacob Markstrom came and spoke with us. And the last question asked was by Eric Francis. And what had happened was that the reporting of a deal falling through with New Jersey and then the Devils going to get Jake Allen kind of seemed to end his path to New Jersey in season. And Eric Francis asked Jacob Markstrom this on the morning of March 1st.
Jacob, have you parked any talk of a trade in that in your mind? Is that not going to happen for sure?
I mean, I think there is, you know, everyone in here, every player in here, I really respect them, you know, everything that's been going on and not going on, and it's you know, how everyone in this room have handled everything, I think it's been really good, and then you know, the whole situation and everything. I'm happy about that. No, I'm not. And I think it could have been handled a lot different from up top.
Woof. Like, I remember being in that scrum, and there had been a lot of other questions asked of Jacob, and we were talking a lot about Mika and some other stuff, and then that, and you're like, whoa, wait, did I just hear what? Because then he walked away right afterwards.
Yep.
It was
Last question.
That was a scrum buster. And I just sat there like stunned because obviously in my brain, I'm like, well, now I know what we're talking about on the, and how do we not? Wes and I had already taped a sit down with Mika Kiprusoff and we were going to be playing that. And you're like, today's supposed to be all about the retiring of number 34. But Jacob just said that, like, how do we not talk about that? And I just remember blank staring my way out of the locker room, like, oh my gosh, Jacob Markstrom just took a shot at the Flames organization and
from up top,
from like took a shot at the very top.
Even if he had excluded that portion, I think downplays the whole situation significantly.
If that last like 7 seconds of that clip we don't play, if he omits that, we're like, okay, I'm just happy to.
Yeah,
okay,
understandable.
But then all of a sudden he decided to like, he kind of had a grenade behind his back, and then all of a sudden it was like, boop, here we go. And I mean, I give him credit. I'm never going to criticize a guy for actually giving us something to talk about. So, and I love that he spoke his mind. It just, I wasn't expecting it. And boy, because he did not end up getting traded at the deadline a week later. So he was a Flame the rest of the season. And boy, did that make the rest of the season rather awkward, didn't it? Because we knew that we were kind of in this limbo land. It was a pretty good idea that there was going to be trade talks revisited in the summertime, but here's Jacob, who's not happy with the organization, still with the team, playing out the string, and also the Dan Vladar situation happened, so now here's Jacob, who we're not sure whether or not he wants to be with the Flames long-term, mentoring Dustin Wolf in the final month of the season. It was a bizarre final 15, 20 games or whatever it was.
Well, and I don't think that we can stress this enough. It was also what was the double whammy was, as you mentioned, the day it happened, the morning of Mika Kiprusoff's jersey retirement. And you're celebrating the best goaltender in franchise history later that day. And your current, I mean, you could argue your current MVP at the time, Jacob Markstrom, shot across the bow. And that just added to, I think, the flavor. It certainly added to a lot of columns where it's like, on Mika Kiprusoff night, here's what your current starting goaltender has to say. And
the best guy they've had
the
since
best guy
Mika.
They've had since Mika Kiprusoff. And again, like you, I will never criticize a player for speaking his mind. In fact, I would love it if they did it more and more often. And I've 100% appreciated all of my interactions with Jacob Markstrom, whether they were in a scrum or whether they were one-on-one. That might have not been the time to fully unleash, and maybe you save that for post-trade deadline. Because as you mentioned, that was before. There, not that there was
but
a
you know
significant
what? Like,
chance.
He got asked the question, and
he
and
didn't
if
duck
he,
it.
If he doesn't say that, then he probably never says it.
And
because I don't think we're going to ask him again.
I think we could have.
But I don't know if we do. Like, if Francis asked that question, and he downplays it, and doesn't give us the last 7-8 seconds... we're probably like, yeah, he's been asked, answered. He's not going to say anything about it. We move on. Like, we're not going to keep on going back to the well.
I think you're okay to as reporters now that that deadline, that firm deadline is gone, because there was really only going to be one spot for Jacob Markstrom. I think we agree.
At that time,
season,
New Jersey.
At that. So when they were off the table, it felt like Jacob Markstrom was off the table. I still think we could have went back to it. Now that you know...
But would there have been a good time to do it in season? I don't know. Like, if you did it on March 9th, I don't know if it makes a difference. Like, we're still talking about it. It's still awkward. The only time he could have saved it until the very end of the season, maybe, if you want to criticize him there. But, and I know you're not
I think the question could have been asked post deadline is, are you a long term fit for the Calgary Flames?
But does it make a difference whether it was pre or post deadline if he wasn't getting traded? It was pretty clear even before the deadline, after that Devils deal fell through, that he wasn't getting traded.
Well, when you say something like that and it's basically calling out your front office, maybe things change slightly the week that happens pre and post comment. Either way, it was a massive thing at the time.
And now, of course, the Markstrom saga got solved on June 19th when he was traded to New Jersey. The deal brought back Kevin Ball and a 2025 first-round pick. Now, my understanding is, I do believe the Flames did have a deal in place with New Jersey prior to the trade deadline. I don't know why it didn't go through, but I do believe there was a deal in place or close prior to the trade deadline in hindsight. However, and I think it was a different deal than what they got, and I don't know if it was better or not. But I do think what they got for Jacob Markstrom, especially now that we've seen the back quarter of 2024 play out with Kevin Ball on the blue line, you mix in Ball and that first round pick, I don't know, I think you're pretty happy about that deal for the Flames. I think you're pretty impressed with the work Craig Conroy did, knowing that he was, again, pigeonholed into one. There was one place for
Jacob. Like it, yeah.
It was New Jersey. He was going to New Jersey for months. So it's not like there were a bunch of other suitors banging down Calgary's door. You had the controversy. Now he's like, well, not only is it New Jersey, but it's New Jersey and a guy who doesn't want to be in Calgary. Like, Conroy had potentially had a lot of his leverage taken away, and he still is able to come up with a guy who's, what, 33, 34 years old at the time, doesn't want to be in Calgary.
Yeah.
And only one place that really makes sense. He's still got a first-round pick and a core piece of the future. I don't know. I think Craig Conroy hit a home run in the Markstrom trade. Knowing all the circumstances, I think he absolutely nailed it. I really do.
Well, even in discussions that we would have had on Flames Talk back in February or March or April, in terms of, okay, well, what could the Calgary Flames reasonably expect as a return for Jacob Markstrom? And you pull the list of goalies that have been traded. Now, I think we stuck to primarily in-season because it was an in-season conversation at the time. But I think Darcy Kemper might have been the one that got the biggest return. And it wasn't overwhelming. And I'm not saying that the return for Markstrom was like, oh my God, this is blows it out of the water. But you've escaped with a first-round pick, which I think was checkmark number one. And two was Kevin Ball, who had played 82 games as a 23-year-old with New Jersey last season. He didn't necessarily know where he was going to slot for the Calgary Flames. He didn't really truly know where he slotted for the New Jersey Devils because they had so many injuries to their defense last season that you don't know what Kevin Ball would have been looking like had Hughes, Siegenthaler, or Dougie Hamilton not been out for large stretches of the season. But lo and behold, you get him in Flames jersey, and he's in your top four. Is he a top four defenseman? We don't know yet. He still only played like 130 games in the NHL. You don't really truly know what you have in a defenseman.
I mean, he's been on their top pairing all year long without fail. All 34 games, he's been on their top pair. He's one of, what, two, three? I don't know. There's been very, very little static when it comes to combinations for the Flames this year. Ball's been one of the very few that has been static in terms of his role, who he's playing with, and has been very steady over playing that role.
Yeah, now what I'm saying is you don't necessarily know what he is yet is because, for me, the Calgary Flames defense is still thin. But the fact of the matter remains, he's been your third best defenseman all season long, and that's not an indictment when your number one is Rasmus Anderson, your number two is Mackenzie Weegar, in whichever order you'd like to put them.
I mean, we've had at-length conversations on this program about extending this guy long term.
Yep.
And not everybody agrees, but even if you don't agree, you can't sit here and, like, for me, I think signing Ball to a 5-6 year extension makes nothing but sense. But even if you aren't there yet and you're like, I'd rather bridge him, well, it's not like you're going to sit here and say, Steinberg, nothing you're saying makes sense. That's the most ridiculous idea of all time. If I wanted to extend Kevin, and this, I'm not trying to take a shot at Rooney, but if I wanted to extend Kevin Rooney for 6 years, okay, that would not make a ton of sense. With no disrespect to Kevin. Kevin Ball, though, that makes a little bit more sense. Age, performance, big picture, all that type of stuff. And the fact that we can have that conversation, not get laughed off the air, I think shows you just how good a fit he's been. Plus, you get the 2025 first-round pick for this year's coming draft. I think the Flames did really well, especially knowing how that Markstrom saga played out and the way it finished. I think you can give two thumbs up on that front. I really do.
And shout out Kevin Ball, who's already got an NHL career high in points through 34 games.
Exactly. So,
and he's also playing 21 and a half minutes a night, which is also a career high.
Text line is open at 960-960 if you want to chime in on our top five stories of 2024. Three more to go. Number one, the final resolution of all those pending UFAs happened in a five-week span in the early stages of 2024, and the Jacob Markstrom saga is your number two story of 2024. Do got to give a shout-out to my boy Alif, and Alif has been a friend of the Calgary sporting community for geez, decades. He's been a friend of Sportsnet 960 for decades. And now with Bel Air Cleaning and Bel Air Cleaners, he is a friend with us once again. Whether you're on the rink, court, field, or pitch, Bel Air Cleaners wants you to look your best and save you some hassle. They pick up, clean, and deliver your sports equipment across Calgary so your gear is fresh and ready to go when you need it. I don't know if there's a service quite like this anywhere in Calgary, probably Alberta, but definitely in Calgary. So they use advanced sanitizing technology to eliminate odor and bacteria to better protect athletes. Bel Air Cleaners makes laundry simple with easy scheduling and reliable delivery. And on top of the convenience, they're also proud supporters of Calgary sports teams and youth programs and are partnered with Kidsport, Flame Sports Bank, Parachutes for Pets, and more. Schedule your next service at bell-air.ca.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Steinberg and Vickers on this Friday. It's December 27th, one of our last few regular Flames Talk editions before the new year. We will not have anything for you on New Year's Day. And then we're back until the Four Nations face-off. We're counting down the top stories of 2024. The top Calgary Flames stories of 2024 so far. Number one story, the final resolution of all those UFAs. Lindholm, then Tanev, then Hanifin in the span of about 5 weeks in the early stages of 2024. Then the Jacob Markstrom saga, which played itself out over a number of weeks. And then kicked back up when they traded him in June. The number three story has to be, Vicks, the 2024 NHL draft, where the Flames went to the draft with nine selections and, due to one trade with the Philadelphia Flyers, ended up coming away with 10 prospects. They did trade down and ended up selecting 10 new players into the organization. 10 new prospects, including two first-rounders. They selected Zane Parekh at number 9 overall, and then at number 28 overall, with the pick that they acquired from the Vancouver Canucks in the aforementioned Elias Lindholm trade, they selected Matvei Gridin as a forward. Then Andrew Bascha, Jacob Battaglia in the second round, Henry Muse, Kirill Zarubin in the third round, Trevor Hoskin in the fourth round, Luke Misa in the fifth round, and Hunter Lang and Eric Jamieson in the sixth round. And honestly, you take a look at all of the grades, and yeah, you hate draft grades maybe slightly more than I do, or maybe it's the other way around. I hate draft grades right from the get-go, or hot takes on draft picks 12 seconds after they're made.
Yes.
But I will say it was pretty unanimous. And you being one of the, you know, foremost draft authorities, and with your work at FC Hockey.
NHLEntryDraft.com.
Thank you.
You were among many, and whether it was Scott Wheeler or Steve Ellis or a lot of the Cam Robinson, all of these other draft experts who do the same thing that you do, putting the research together for a year's coming draft, everybody was raving about Calgary's draft strategy and the 10 new prospects they came away with.
Absolutely. When you run through the list, which you did, and you look at the reoccurring theme, if you will, of the players that they drafted, there is a lot of high skill individuals in that group that the Flames came away with at the 2024 draft in Vegas. And in particular, and again, like you mentioned, hate draft grades, hate this guy's a steal, that guy's a steal, because it's up to the player to do something. Doesn't matter necessarily where you're drafted, it's what you do after you've gone through the draft process. But you look at getting Bascha at 41. You look at Muse at 74. You look at Luke Misa at 150. And then, of course, there's you run through the list. The amount of point per game players the Calgary Flames plucked out of the 2024 draft, both in their draft year and in their draft plus 1 year, it is absolutely astronomical, the haul that the Flames left. Like, Luke Misa has 48 points in 32 games with Brampton this year. You go to Henry Muse, a defenseman, 44 points in 32 games, 1.38 points per game out of the defenseman in his draft plus 1 year. Jacob Bataglia has 20 goals in 33 games. Oh, yeah, he's got 43 points in 33 games.
Yeah.
Pretty good. You just look at the haul, and again, not everybody's going to hit. Just because you have success in junior doesn't mean you're going to have success as a pro, particularly in the NHL. But the amount of high-skill players Craig Conroy and Todd Button were able to add to the prospect pool for the Flames, like it's chef's kiss coming out of Vegas.
Yeah. This was Todd Button, the director of amateur scouting, who sat down with us on the draft floor at Sphere Las Vegas. For now, the final in-person draft for quite some time, at least the way that it has been done. And the director of amateur scouting sat down with us on the draft floor at Sphere Las Vegas, which was a pretty cool experience, not going to lie. That also was a top story, being in that place, you and I.
Beautiful.
What a cool experience that was.
If that's the last one, what a way to go.
What a way to go out. But this was Todd Button, and I asked him, you know, you're always happy about your draft class, and now you have 10 new prospects. You got to be happy about this one.
Obviously, Connie did a great job getting all these picks as the year went on, and you know, he faced some challenging situations with some UFAs. So this is basically the time you turn the page now. Now we got all these picks in our pocket and prospects, and we got names to them. So I'm excited. The group's excited. Management's excited. So it's the next step.
Did a really nice job, and I sure did. Like, this was the first draft year where Craig Conroy and his philosophy had the full reins, right? Like, he took over in May of 2023. So the draft in Nashville, that was still, like, all the scouting had been done under Brad Treliving as the general manager. And I don't think there was a drastic change in terms of philosophies, but this, the scouting year 23-24, leading up to the 24 NHL draft, that was Craig Conroy's first opportunity to have carte blanche of what he thinks the priorities are for Todd Button and his scouting group. And they clearly put an emphasis on high skill. And, you know, Zane Parekh's a perfect example, right? Maybe there are other areas of his game that need to be worked out, but those things are teachable. What these guys have, what these players possess, less teachable. And I think you see that whether it's Misa, whether it's Muse, whether it's Basha, whether it's Bataglia. Yeah, there are other areas of their game that are going to need to evolve and progress, but the high skill across the board seemed to be the biggest theme coming out of Vegas.
Well, and what's funny, and this wasn't done, not to go by design again, by design, but when I ran through the names and listed their stats, I didn't mention Parekh, which you've got to. Parekh at the time was the reigning OHL and CHL Defenseman of the Year, led all three leagues, the OHL, WHL, and Q, in defenseman scoring. And then we also haven't even mentioned Matvei Greiden yet, who's in his first year in the QMJHL, and he's got 35 points in 29 games, adapting to a new league after playing the USHL last season, adapting to a new language where he's in Shawinigan as opposed to a more prominent English-speaking
sort of
region.
That's one thing somebody brought up to me, and just as a quick side note, there's one thing that somebody brought up to me recently is Greiden was already learning English.
Yeah.
He obviously is Russian. That's his first language. You know, his command on the English language, pretty darn good for a guy who hasn't been over here that long. But now he's not a fluent native English speaker. And now he's in a spot where English is not a majority language. So now he's learning French while he still doesn't, like, I can't even imagine that.
And it's not like he hears a French word and gets the Russian equivalent. He gets the French word, gets the English equivalent, and then has to find the Russian equivalent to that as well. So it's not insignificant, the amount of change from a day-to-day standpoint, never mind the hockey aspect, but just the off-ice aspect of going, again, as you mentioned, from Russia, spent 2 years in the USHL, so this is sort of his third year in North America, but his first months in a predominantly French community. So that's not something you take lightly either. And I know he got off to a bit of a slow start to the season in Shawinigan in the Q, and getting a lot of adaption going on, but he's really sort of started to catch fire as he's gotten more and more comfortable.
Okay, that was the number three story, the 2024 NHL draft. The number four story of 2024, Michael Backlund hits 1,000 games. I'm sure this will also show up in our top five moments of 2024 as well. But, you know, there was a neat little countdown going on as soon as the season began, the 24-25 season, because Michael Backlund entered not just within striking distance, but tantalizingly close to that round number of 1,000 NHL games. And he became just the second player in Flames franchise history to hit the 1,000 game mark, all with the flaming C on his chest. Of course, joining Jerome Iginla. He did so as the captain of the Calgary Flames, which I think means that much more. And yes, on October 30th, Michael Backlund went from 999 NHL games played to 1,000. It's too bad the game was an absolute pile of garbage.
I was like, don't mention the game itself. Just mention he got to 1,000.
But that happens. It was still a really cool thing to celebrate. And you know, the actual game itself is what it is. I think for Michael, it would be a little bit different. But on my end, yeah, the game itself was cool. He got to 1,000 games. But to me, the lead up to it, and, you know, Michael joined us on the show the day before from Salt Lake City and spent 20 minutes with us. The lead up to it, all of his teammates talking about it, the pins, the shirts.
The jerseys of his buddies from back home in Sweden coming over, the Backlund 1000s.
That was super neat. Everybody wearing Backlund jerseys for warm-up in Utah. Everybody wearing Backlund jerseys for game 1,001 when he got his silver stick before the game against New Jersey. Like, just the entire lead up, countdown, and celebration of 1,000 games of Michael in Calgary. And again, 1,000 games for a role that Michael plays is not the norm. Michael Backlund would have played 1,000 games in the NHL, no doubt about it. But a lot of guys like Michael, they'll get a 2 or a 4 year deal here. And maybe they'll sign another deal with the same team. But you know what? Sometimes it comes to an end in that market. And a team's going in a different direction. Or the salary cap doesn't necessarily work. So, you know, they go sign in another market. I think of guys like, you know, examples, even right now. I mean, I think about guys like Jonathan Marchessault, right? Like Marchessault, you'd think. And I know that he didn't start in Vegas. But you would have thought after winning the cup and the way that everything went, you're like, you know what? Marchessault's going to be a Golden Knight for life. Nope. Couldn't do it. The cap didn't work. He goes and signs in Nashville. You know, even Steven Stamkos, they couldn't make it work. And he goes to sign in Nashville. But I think of players like Michael, not top line players, not elite players, just really good, solid, effective NHLers. Those guys don't usually stay with one organization their entire career. And I could probably come up with 11 or 12 different examples of guys like that. Ryan O'Reilly, or I could go down and down the list.
Well, let me help you with that, because there's two things that stand out to me about Backlund 1,000 games. One is talking to him before they left on the road trip, where it's like, yeah, I signed back in Calgary partly because I wanted to hit 1,000 games as a member of the Calgary Flames. So that's not insignificant to Michael Backlund. It's not just 1,000 games. It's 1,000 games all with one franchise. Mm-hmm. And this ties into it. Number two, talking to Mark Giordano in the lead up. Mark Giordano got to 949 with Calgary. Game one to 949. And I remember asking him, like, do you get the sense from Michael Backlund that this is more significant to him because he's doing it all with the Calgary Flames, all with one franchise? And I'm not here to put words into Mark Giordano's mouth. But it almost was like it almost felt like in our conversation, he wished he could have done that too. And that there's a guy that you're talking about who came up the hard way in Giordano, undrafted to Norris Trophy winner to casualty of the expansion draft for the Flames. It is just so hard for players to get to 1,000 games, even harder to get to 1,000 games with one franchise. And you get the sense of how much it meant to Michael Backlund to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of like other guys in that same, you know, who have been that really reliable two-way guy. Ryan Kesler didn't play his entire career in Vancouver.
Nope.
Ryan O'Reilly didn't play his entire career with Colorado or Buffalo. It it doesn't usually happen. Usually those guys end up getting contracts here or contracts there, and they play the 1,000 games and more. But to do it all with one team, pretty special. And I think it's super neat to see Michael Backlund do it. I think, do you remember the numbers on how many guys it was? I had them at the time. Now I forget.
Swedes, it was like 17 or
no,
something.
No, I'm talking about the number of guys to do it with one team. And I think it was under 100.
I think it was like 83 or 84.
I think it was 81, 81 or 82. It was under 100 for sure. Of guys to play 1,000 games with the same team. In the 100-plus year history of the NHL, less than 100 players have done it, which I think tells you how significant what Michael did was.
And again, it just goes back to, I remember, because at the time, he had some very eyebrow-raising comments coming out of locker clean-out a couple seasons ago where he was entering the final year of his contract. And before it was the big five, it was the big six with Michael Backlund. Now, of course, we all know his contract got done. He gets the captaincy, and he's here for more years. But it's just crazy to think about.
It's 82, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. We split the difference. 83, 81, boom.
82. The number five story of 2024, to wrap it up this hour on Flames Talk, Scotiabank Place, man. Like, I think it still, even for the most optimistic people about this city finally getting a new arena, on July 22nd, it finally felt real, like real. They held a news conference. They had plans. They had renderings. They had dates. They had timelines. They had construction companies, all of it. On July 22nd, that long-awaited day was finally here, the official unveiling of Calgary's new arena. It had a friggin' name, Scotiabank Place.
And it's going to take a while.
It will. I don't think it'll take that long. It took a little while to go from Pengrowth to Scotiabank. Like, hey, it won't take that long. I remember Canadian Airlines, Pengrowth, Scotiabank, we'll be fine. And it'll be the Scotiabank Place. I bet it'll be rolling off the tongue by like November of its first year.
This might be blasphemous, but I'm just gonna keep saying dome and dome and dome. And I know it's not gonna be called that, but it's just, where are you going? Oh, I gotta head down to the dome. That's what it's gonna be for me.
I guarantee you that won't be that will not be permanent.
We're gonna find out, but yeah, like, how long has this been going on? Back to 2006, I think, 2005, 2006, Ken King first floated a mention.
I want to say this has been, even before then, there were talks about it. I want to say like early 2000s, like 01, 02, like even before the run, there had been talks about it. At some point I don't remember exactly what the date would have been, but like, in that range you were talking about, 05, 06, 07, I remember Rob Kerr did this like magnus opus of arena coverage. It was like a 25-part radio series of different interviews about, you know, people who helped build this rink or that rink, or, and not just in hockey. And it was all designed to kind of, hey, this is all background material for when a rink finally gets done. And then it was sometime, 2014, when Ken King, the late Ken King, unveiled the plans for Calgary Next, over in the West Village. And then that was a thing for a little while, and then it got squashed and then moved over to the current site that it's at right now. So for like,
and
that
even the
day,
first iteration of that deal falling apart.
Absolutely. In what, December 2021, when that deal between the city and the Flames got killed. And then it was May 2023 when we finally had news again, but July 2024 for there to be renderings, a name, Scotiabank Place, timeline and dates. That was the first time that it felt real, like really real.
I almost feel like it'll, we know that there's a big hole in the ground there now. We know it's just north of the Saddle Dome.
But it changes. It's different every day. It's amazing.
It's just like, it's real. You drive by it every day and it's happening. Something's going on, and it'll be a momentous occasion when day one, you know, home opener or whatever event happens to unveil that arena, that event center. Look forward to it.
Yep. For the time being, we get the Sportsnet scoreboard, which is friggin' awesome. That was not one of the top five stories in 2024, but it sure is cool. And they keep on little by little unleashing it a little bit more. We'll have a new building in this city. Hopefully, maybe we'll have something figured out with a brand new train line at that point, or in the direction. Fingers crossed on that front. But we have the new arena, and that's awesome. And it'll open sometime in 2027. And the unveiling of it was in July of 2024. Our number five story of our top five stories of 2024. So to recap, number one, the final resolution of all those pending UFAs in the early months of 2024. Number two, the Jacob Markstrom saga. Number three, the 2024 NHL draft. Number four, Michael Backlund hits 1,000 games. And number five, Scotiabank Place. I don't know. I think we did a pretty good job of encapsulating the top five stories of this calendar year.
I like to think so.
We had a few others. I'll just, as we wrap things up, some of the other ideas that we had in there, some of the other ideas for me, the hot, cold nature of Andre Kuzmenko I had in there, and Dustin Wolf, the year of Dustin Wolf. He got more NHL time than he has ever gotten in the calendar year 2024. He got brought up for the final month of last season this calendar year. He's become a Calder Trophy front runner or Calder Trophy, I don't know, candidate, and a big part of Calgary's success this year, all in the year of 2024. And then you had Mark Savard one and done as a story as well. Those are some of the other ones that just barely missed the cut of our top five for this year.
Power play outage.
That's right. I don't know if it's taken a massive
step. That's fair.
It's taken a step this year.
It's going the right way.
It is going the right way. I will definitely. Unfortunately, the penalty kill has gone the other way. It's been one of the more stranger stories of this season, but that's for another day. His name is Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Vergy, our outstanding producers this hour. The top five stories of 2024. There you go, in the books. And this hour of Flames Talk has been coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.